All right, welcome everybody. It is April 20th, 2016. Thanks for being on the webinar. Do appreciate it. Do appreciate you sending in all your questions to content@noteschool.com as well. And as you can see, I've got Matt now able to put together my little syllabus ahead of time, so it should be consistent with the other formats they've been using on Monday and Tuesday. And I'll typically do what I normally do, which is add in some typing and maybe highlight some things as we go through. I think it's helpful to go back and look in your notes when I do that. So I'll continue to do that and be a little bit different than the other calls, but good to say hello to everybody again. I'm coming off of the Mastermind weekend out in Texas. We had a good number of people out there, number one, but a great group and just a real special, as everybody is. And I've always believed this. In fact, we always talked about it at the event where I just said it's a special group. There's no question. All of the members that we have in Note School, when we get together, it's like a family reunion, and everybody is willing to share, willing to help. And I think that's just something you don't always see in organizations such as this. So it was really great to get to know everybody. I've got a few comments and things I want to bring from that. You'll see that in our syllabus here. I've got some industry news just want to share with you. And we've got one question, multi-part question that we're going to go into tonight as well. And we'll see where that takes us. Now, if you're new to this format, well, pretty simple. To participate, there's two ways you can do it. You can just type in a question, a comment, or anything like that by opening the question box if it's not already open on your control panel. It's on the right-hand side of your screen, unless you've moved it around. And you can type that anything in. It shows up on my screen, and I'll be able to answer that. If you have the capability to talk either on the phone or through your computer system, you can do that as well. And you can indicate that you would like to do that by raising your hand. So look for the little hand icon that you can click on, and that will let me know that you want to participate live on the webinar as well. Let's see here. Couple of different things. Let's start today with the industry news, as I often do. Several different things that came to light here this past week and a half or so. One of them, if you haven't seen this article yet, you may want to check this out on MarketWatch. For those of you who attended the Tyson's Corner event, 3-day event that we had last month, we had a reporter in there, Andrea, and Andrea, being from MarketWatch, she sat in the entire first day with us and wrote a very nice article about what she had learned there. I'll be writing a response to that article, something I meant to get to today, didn't quite have the time, but I'll be writing a response to that because she brings out some very, very good points in this article about how we're different than other folks in the business. First thing she did that was important, she had to bring out here that, just kidding. she put a nice little comment here about me, which, of course, did you think I heard a little bit about that this past weekend in Texas? I sure did. But it's a very nice compliment of her, and enjoyed the training, enjoyed the way we teach it. And it did bring out the fact that there's a lot of these notes in the post-crisis world, as she states there. She also brought out the fact that we believe, and we do, and we showed everybody in that room, including her, how we are able to accomplish things in the industry that the government and the banks simply aren't able to do. And so we play a very, very vital role in the overall recovery on that. She did her homework as well. It wasn't just come out and talk with us or just observe us and listen to us. She went back and she crunched her numbers. She verified information, which I think is great. So here she's showing us some of the previous buyers from the last several sales. She interviewed Eddie over the phone as well. So there's a conversation in there about Eddie's take on things and the hardest hit funds and how that's working. And she also spoke with TJ and Rick down in South Florida and or Orlando area. I guess they're up in my neck of the woods here. I've met them several times, and I thought they reached out because they were Note School students. I thought she reached out to them, but apparently it was she found them somehow, advertising or what have you, is the way I understand it, and interviewed them. It just so happened that they were Note School trained and doing well. We've used some of their case studies in the past. In fact, one of them was used at a contest. So they interviewed those gentlemen as well, on how they've added this to their business, on how they're being able to help people. So pretty thorough, pretty interesting article that she wrote here. So there's the guys. And I would take a look. And I know some of you are going to use part of that in your slides and those sort of things if you're meeting with capital. One of the things I want to caution you on, since we're down here, you're always going to have in a format like this, let's face it, you're always going to have some negative responses and things like that. For the most part, you let those things go. I know there's some comments in there about people saying, for example, yeah, but you can't buy one note at a time. You have to buy a whole portfolio and that sort of thing. It's not worth it to engage with that person and make it a big production, because you and I know that that's not the case. They're just undereducated. They don't know the market that well and that sort of thing. So we don't want something to blow up on there that really doesn't need to be done. But good article for you to read. And for those of you doing presentations to capital, it's a well-read publication, and I think if you're looking for, well, who do you work with, why do you find these assets kind of things, I think that backs up a lot of what we're doing. There will be an article, we just submitted it, let's see, before I left, last Wednesday or whatever it was, to RealtyTrack. And so RealtyTrack's going to be doing an article also that we wrote. So I'll try to point out these things that either were featured in, like this is the case, and also articles that we have written, in case you're utilizing those for your own individual uses and presentations. Okay, other things in the business. I know we've talked about hardest hit funds quite a bit on this particular call, and I'm not going to rehash any of that, but this is an updated article. I believe it just came out today. And so you may want to take a look at that. This is talking now about the $2 billion extra that we brought up, I think, months ago, when they first announced this, I think it was back in February. So it's something we've known about, but now what they're doing is the allocation. So back then we said the $2 billion is going to be released in two phases, phase one and then phase two, and each is going to split that $2 billion in half. So they have a table here that has a little bit better of a breakdown for you as to where those allocations now are looking to go. So it looks like all of the hardest hit fund states, with the exception of Alabama, is getting money in the first round. And then you can see there's five states that chose not to apply for money on the second round for whatever reason. So that'll give you a little heads up on that. Blighted properties, again, is another part of this allocation. So if you have properties that fall in that category, this may be something else you want to take a look at. So I will take this link and I'll make sure that we add this right into the syllabus here for you. And let me do that to this one as well. Okay, so you have those two. And let's see. This is another one that came out in the M report today. I think Kevin Moore sent this. Well, actually, it was a couple days ago, wasn't it? I think Kevin Moore sent this, or Bob, maybe you have sent this to me. And this is more of something on a performing note class. But again, I just want to talk a little bit about the industry here as well. It's something we've been talking about for quite some time now. It's one of the reasons that we came up with the 50-50 model. It's one of the reasons that we're emphasizing seller finance notes a lot more than we have in previous years, because the industry is headed where it is headed. And one of the big fallouts here that this article is talking about is what has happened to the lending industry as they try to understand their responsibilities and their liabilities when they go to do loans. In addition to that, there's been a limitation on how much money they can charge to originate loans. So that is going to have a big impact on these smaller loans. And you can see homes that are selling for $50,000 or less, which we've been talking about. So you've, chances are, if you've been to the 3 days within the last 6 to 8 months, you've heard us, or possibly longer, you heard us talking about that and how this is going to happen. In fact, this is a part of a presentation that we have put together that I'm going to be using at the classes, showing that unfortunately this Dodd-Frank has kind of put a barrier between some buyers, the lower price end buyers, and their ability to get loans. They didn't make it illegal for the banks to do loans, of course. They just took the profit out of them. And, you know, this notion that, well, the banks need to do the right thing and help these borrowers, it's ridiculous. Banks are in business to make money. And if they're going to lose money doing a loan, they're not going to do the loan. And that's been the fallout. And I have some examples of that, which I'll just briefly go through here. But this is from another other research that I did before this article came out, and that is the Dodd-Frank limits on fees. So imagine this, you're a banker and you're now being told, or even a private lender, by the way, you're being told that on a $50,000 loan at 4% interest, the most you can make on these, at 4%, I got to change this. No, I didn't mean interest there. I meant profit margin on this. The fees, am I get that right? No, the fee on this one, $2,500. So I'm getting myself confused. $50,000 loan, 4%. Yeah, so there's a 5% fee. My apologies. The fee limitation on loans of $50,000, which are right now running around 4%, so they're higher than what the larger loans are for qualified folks, there's a $2,500 cap on that because it's based on 5%. So 5% of the 50 grand is $2,500. That's the most the bank can charge to originate that loan. Well, other numbers indicate that it costs about $3,000 in bank expenses. When they look at all their expenses, the personnel, the paperwork, the regulations, et cetera, infrastructure, all of those things, it costs the bank about $3,000 to originate a loan. In addition, it takes another 2% per year in expenses to service that loan. So if the most you can charge is $2,500 and it's going to cost you $3,000 to originate the loan plus another 2% on a 4% loan, it's no wonder banks aren't making these types of loans. It doesn't make sense for them. It's an exercise in stupidity for them to do that. Now, on top of Dodd-Frank, some states have enforced limits, and they're calling those the high-cost provision states. In those states, the most that a lender can charge, okay, is 3%. So once again, if we take that same $50,000 loan, write it at 4% interest, if the most we can charge, a bank can charge, I should say, is 3%, 3% of $50,000 is $1,500. It's the most they can make. Costs them twice that in expenses to originate the loan, plus their servicing fees are the same. It doesn't make sense. So this is why some of these other models, when you're buying non-performing notes and getting them to get the property and offering financing, whether it's through a consumer or whether it's through an investor, we just have different rules and different outlooks on how we can do this. It makes much more sense for us to do these things. The banks can't do it. So you're now really starting to see in industry publications that is the fact. These loans, in a recent report from Urban Institute, found that the national share of the loans between 2004 and 2011 was 3% and 4%. By 2014, it's just 2.3%. It's been cut in half. And it's not going to go back up. It's going to continue to go down. What you will probably see are more banks, more private lenders stepping into that space. Certainly seller financing is going to fill a part of that void as well. So pretty interesting article. I didn't receive this until about 3:30 today, and we were on another call. So I haven't been through the entire article, just kind of scanned through it here. But that's what this is about. So I would take a look at that. M Report is another publication, by the way, that you may want to take a look at. DS News looks very similar for obvious reasons there. And let's see, the other video here that I'm going to put, let me get this one first. Put that on your reports or your notes, I should say. The last one I'll put on here for you, well, it's actually on your syllabus already, so I don't have to put this one on here, but this is David Fenoglio. Many of you, if you haven't met David, you know of David. David is a long-time member of Notes School and has known Eddie and built a very good personal relationship with Eddie as well. He lives out in Texas. He's a part of the ranch out there for those who've been out to the Note Recovery Center, that sort of thing. And he's very, very active in his local community in helping kids. And that's our charity for Note School. And for those of you who've been to any event, we hold auctions and that sort of thing to raise capital for them. So we put together, or they put together, a little video this weekend on that, and they asked me to play this tonight. It's only 56 seconds long, so it's not going to take a long period of time, but this will tell you all a little bit about the upcoming event and what that's going to look like. I'm assuming the sound should be okay on this one. I'm not sure. Let me know here.
Hey guys, it's Eddie. I'm here with my friend David Fenoglio, and we want to talk about the Dive Spotter for class. It's going to be a one-day class on entity creation, not only the tax implications, but asset protection. He's a brilliant guy. All of us are going to learn something from that. The cost of that is $250 or $200 for a guest or a spouse. Now, all proceeds are going to go to the Child Welfare Board of Montague County. David Fenoglio, you're going to take us to full work that night.
Yes, exactly. We're going to have a great afternoon. We'll provide it.
All right. Looks like the buffering on that was causing a bit of issue on my other computer as well. So I'm assuming that wasn't working too good. But I included the link on your syllabus. It's actually down here a little bit further. So please take a look at that video. And we're trying to let you folks know as soon as we possibly can when these other events are coming up so that you can make plans and arrangements. We've had that request now over the past year, people just saying, boy, if we knew about the events sooner, we could have attended that. So that's what we're trying to do here, and explain them maybe a little bit better by putting together videos and such. So as you look through the syllabus, you'll see a number of websites where we'll talk about these other events in detail. And once again, if you can make it to these events, I think you're going to find that it's really, really worthwhile to do. It's getting to meet other people, getting to meet the vendors, and just the whole experience. It's a part of why you join Note School, and so I would highly encourage you to take a look at those, learn more about them. If you can make them, fantastic. So we got one, I think the Summer Summit's coming up in May, and then we've got the other appreciation has a tendency to be in November. All right, let's see what we got here. Lisa's asking Kevin, and we can use all the articles and third-party materials to present to Capital. Absolutely, yeah, no problem at all. And if you are presenting that way, and I'm not saying, you have to decide individually how you present to Capital, but when you get to a point of what do you bring to the table, you bring a lot. You bring the education, you bring the assets, you bring the relationships with professionals. That's a big package. So they might be bringing money to the equation, but that's not going to get them all the different things that you have. So they're bringing money, you're bringing possibly money, but certainly you're bringing this package, which includes all of the above. So I think at some point when most folks are talking with capital, it's like, well, where do you get these assets? How are they overseen? How are they purchased? These type of articles, I think, will really raise that level of comfort for them, number one, because they see that our expertise is there as well. All right. And let's see. Yeah, Lisa was – I almost did say that, Lisa, by the way. So Lisa was out at the Titanium event this weekend, and she had picked up some onions from the area where she lives, right very, very close, garlic. She's big garlic, cloves, and such, and she brought them purposely for another student, and it ended up that student wasn't there, so she had the idea of, hey, why don't we auction them off? And Tim Sieblik bought the big bag of garlic clovers on there. So, and all the funds. And that goes to that charity that I was talking about with David Fenoglio. So the Child Welfare Board of Manitowoc County is where all that goes. And we've raised a considerable amount of money. Our membership base has raised a considerable amount of money over the last 3 years for them. And it's been put to great work, All right. Let's see. Land contract and... yeah, Ken, what I'll do, Ken's saying he isn't seeing these links on the syllabus that's been posted, and that is correct because I added them as we went through. So by the end of the call, I'll drag and drop this one back over there so that you can get that. I usually do that on every webinar that I do because I have a tendency to write notes right in here as we answer certain questions. So that's why you're not seeing those right now on the one that's loaded because I loaded that as soon as I logged in. So thanks for pointing that out so I can share that info with everybody else. And Al, I see your question there. So let me come back to that after I handle this one first for Karen. So let me see if Karen is present, first of all. Okay. Karen, I see two phones on there for you. So I'll be coming to you in just a minute here. But let me just brief it for everybody. Karen submitted this one either yesterday or today. Like to know more about forced place insurance. I have a subperforming note recorded as a land contract in Paris, Tennessee, Henry County, that went non-performing. So I asked my servicing company to put forced place insurance on the property just prior to sending a NOI letter. NOI letter. Okay. I'm going to have a couple questions for you. On that, I was asked if I wanted the property insured without liability or with liability. I think I want it without liability. What does forced place insurance typically cover? Also, if we proceed with the termination of the land contract, would it be best to move it to NAA beforehand or wait and have them take it over afterwards? The assets in Tennessee, the bar is a veteran who moves back and forth from assisted living facilities and the home. Obviously, probably on a fixed income. Is Tennessee one of the states that's getting more money for hardest hit funds? And it is, by the way. But the land contract could be, again, could be the issue there. So multi-part question. Let's start with the top here. And then I'll open your line, Karen, in just a minute here. Forced place insurance, first of all, what is it as a general topic, a 30-foot view, if you will? You have this on properties. You have this on vehicles, boats and cars and things like that. You're required to have insurance on it. And that's a part of the language in this relationship. If we're lending money and it's backed by a collateral, we want that collateral to be insured. So the borrower is responsible to insure the property from the very beginning. Now that, again, it could be a house, it could be a car. They're supposed to insure that. Now, if they stop paying that insurance, well, that not only is a liability for the borrower, but it's also putting all of the collateral value of the underlying asset for the lender at risk. Therefore, we can force insurance on it. Now, normally if this happens with a bank, not us, if it happens with a bank will force insurance and it's going to be high place insurance and they'll get as much coverage on that thing as they possibly can because they're going to pass that cost through to the borrower. Okay, so they will be invoicing the borrower on that or pulling more money out for escrow, whatever the case may be. That's why it has a tendency sometime to get a bad reputation where some people go, well, it's not fair that these banks force insurance on and that person now has to come up with even more money and that's putting them into foreclosure. Okay, we could argue that either way. If they didn't want the forced place insurance, well, they should be making the payments ahead of time to begin with, or at least working with their insurance company. But that's the basis of why it might get a bad reputation. Now, what we would do in the business, which is really what the banks want to do, this forced place insurance does not cover everything. It's not meant to. It's meant to cover the risk of the person who is getting that insurance in place. Well, if we are the lender, so if we've bought that note and we are now the lender, we want to protect our collateralized interest in that property. And so in other words, if that property burnt down, if the property suffers major damage, anything like that, we want that covered. There's even forced flood insurance that you can put on properties if you feel that that is a necessity, because what you want to do with that type of insurance is cover what your collateralized interest is, okay? So it's not going to cover the person's furniture, okay? The person who's living in the house. It's not going to cover their personal assets, their furniture, or anything like that, because you don't have a claim on that as a lender anyhow. What you have is a collateralized interest in the value of that property. That's what you want to protect. So that's where the next question becomes. I was asked if I wanted the property insured with liability or without liability insurance. That's where I would get a little bit more clarification as to what they are specifically talking about, because every insurance policy that I've seen on everything that is being insured, it always tells you here's what's being insured and here's what we're not going to cover. Okay, so let me get Karen unmuted here. And I'm not sure if you want one phone or both unmuted, so I unmuted one for right now.
Can you hear me?
I can. Do you want the other phone?
The other phone is my husband. No, that's fine. You can keep it.
We'll keep it muted. Is your...
Yeah. Well, because I'm wearing a headset, so normally we listen on one computer. But talk to you, we need to.
Yeah, I just tease it. Okay, so what did they say about the specifically what the liability was? I'm just curious about that.
They didn't, and I asked for a copy of the policy, and they said as soon as they get it, they'll send it to me. So I purchased it without really knowing. I purchased without liability, and I just want to go through it. You know, I sent this question to you, and then I did some Google research today because I haven't done it before. I just want to make sure I understand. You know, what I should be doing.
Yeah, and that's where I'm just curious about what kind of liability that they are putting out here. If that means, are you insuring somebody getting hurt in the property? That really doesn't fall on you. It's just like a bank. If think of yourself as a bank, does your bank have your property and force you to have a property that covers all liabilities of what happens in the house? No, they're interested in covering their own. Now, when you get your own homeowner's insurance, you want to cover that because you don't want somebody to slip and fall and that sort of thing. So I'm thinking no on that if that's what they specifically meant by the liability.
I'll follow up on that, but my main concern was, the notice of intent letter might make someone mad, and then, he's got a NOD letter now because time has gone by. So I just didn't want him punching holes in all the walls or, when you talked about the house burning down or major damage, does that also cover me in case the homeowner does it himself because he's mad? I mean, if he lights a match on the way out.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And again, I just, are you using the insurance companies that we recommend, that sort of thing? Or are you using somebody outside of our vendor relationship?
I just let the service company do it for right now. I just don't know if that $10 a month is typical. Is that $10 a month just my service company fee, and they actually are sending a monthly fee to the homeowner? You know how you said it's very expensive and the bank forces the insurance, you know, on top of the payment. I didn't think about that, but my husband brought it up today, and I'm like, well, let me find out what it really costs. Is this just my cost, but they're putting more money on the payment? I don't know that. I haven't seen an invoice. It's just new.
Yeah, and I think that's what you need to see, and you can, if you want, also to kind of shop the insurance, if you want to get on you know, on our website and look at the insurance on there and compare and contrast and go with that. It's just, I'm always, you know, it's always a risky business where I don't want to say something like, oh, I wouldn't worry about that. And then I just assume that their liability meant something and it doesn't. But yes, you want to be covered. And maybe that's a better way to approach it. You want to be covered for all the potential things that could happen to that property. So whether it's, the person leaving upset and causing damage, any of those things, you want to make sure that you're covered for that. So, I would do what you're doing, which is get a little bit more clarity from this particular company on what they specifically mean by that, liability.
Okay.
Yeah.
But does the $10 sound like just a servicing fee charge, or does that sound like it's a typical force place insurance charge?
Yeah, some companies, like your homeowner's insurance, if will it cover your personal jewelry? Well, yeah, but if you have expensive jewelry, they're going to probably say, no, we'll cover up to a certain amount. If you want us to cover additional, you know, expensive jewelry or items, you're going to have to get a rider to the policy.
Right.
So it could be something like that, or it could be something where they're saying, well, if you want to make sure that if the person in the property has you know, some accident there that it's covered, you could do that, which in my case, that wouldn't fall on us anyway, because we don't, it is a land contract, isn't it?
No, actually, that is a mistake. Matt and I talked earlier, and we had some terminology, and I did give him the wrong information. This does happen to be a mortgage with a note. I have several land contracts, but this one is not. So that is my mistake.
Okay. Yeah. So in that case, I mean, you don't have.
It's also. Yeah.
I mean, you don't have liability for that. But if you feel that, hey, you know what, for less potential hassle, maybe I get it. It's not that much money, because what I would do in a case like this, if you're going to be having this person at some point, it looks like they're going to be moved out. It seems like it's probably the best thing for them. They need some additional care, the assisted living facility. Obviously they're not able to afford both. I'm sure there's a fixed income situation here. Insurance probably helps out with the other. So I could see where they're not going to be in this for a long period of time. Certainly not going to throw more money at fighting it, if that makes sense. Again, just kind of guessing on what you've written here. And if that's the case, once that property becomes vacant, then you might do an insurance change on that. If you're going to get it rehabbed, or if you're going to leave it or sell it as is, you can adjust that insurance, you know, back at that point in time. Maybe if you're going to fix it up, just get a builder's risk policy or something like that. That's very inexpensive. We'll cover all the property and some liability if anybody gets hurt on the job, kind of thing.
Right. Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Cause this, if he moves out and this is vacant, you might have too much insurance at that point in time, on it. And, but you know, think in terms of what the property's worth and what the use is going to be on that. But no, I think you're doing the right thing. You just always have to do that with insurance companies to make sure you got the right thing. And I think what will happen after a while, you find the right insurance company out of these vendors that you like, and then you'll know every time this is, you know, what coverage you need.
Okay, I didn't really realize you could pick your own and then just tell the servicing company who it is. Is that how it works? Okay.
Sure. You can. Yep. No problem there at all. Because all they're doing is facilitating that for you. Now, they might have a little more streamlined process, but I would say that the vendors we use, they have a streamlined process as well. So I don't know that
Yeah.
you don't need to do that.
Okay, the other thing I talked to Matt about was I'm sure this is going to go all the way through foreclosure. I mean, he's 2 years behind in his taxes. He hasn't paid me since I bought the note, even though it was supposed to be performing. But anyway, I don't know. He's had a stroke or something. I don't know what his deal is, but it's medical. So I guess my question is, would it be best to move it to like National Asset Advisors? Because my intent would be to have them rehab it, put a sign out front, seller financing, and turn it, into a performing note. I mean, would it be better to have them do the foreclosure and all that, or just turn it over to them once the foreclosure is done? I have a plan on talking with them and
Sure.
interviewing them a little bit, but do you have a
Sure.
feel for that?
Your exit strategy is to get this person. If you had a pick plan A, have this person out. Hopefully, they voluntarily leave. Deed in lieu kind of thing. But if either way, deed in lieu or getting this property through the foreclosure mechanisms, I don't think is long in Tennessee. But anyhow, you acquire the property back, and then what do you want to do? You want to rent it? You want to sell it as is, or
Sell it.
sell it to a consumer?
Well, I was, at the expo, and National Asset Advisor talked about they would go in, give you a quote for what the rehab's going to be, get that rehab carried out, put a sign out front, seller financing available, qualify the new buyer, and get a performing note out of it. I mean, that would.
If that's what your plan is, Karen, I'd move it over there to them. And the reason is, and just for everybody on the call, for their background, NAA is a conglomeration of companies. So they go beyond just servicing. They can service a note and send the letters and do all the normal things, but they also have contacts pretty much everywhere that they can have contractors go out, estimate the rehab. They can make sure the rehab is done properly, have it inspected. They can put a sign out in the yard. They can sell the property. They can rent it. They can do all of those things for you. So they can actually find that buyer. And they've done that, tens of thousands of times for other companies. So that's the space they're in. They're like a one-stop shop for all of that, where you go, here you go. I just got this property. I'm not being paid. I'd like for you to get the foreclosure going. After the foreclosure, let's get it, estimate for rehab and everything else that I said. So I would, if your future in mind is that, it makes sense in my mind to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, because even if I went after hardest hit funds, I mean, it might catch him up, but it doesn't seem like he has any propensity to pay going forward.
Well, it's, I would look at it. I certainly would look at, we've had a couple case studies in Tennessee, well, I think there's one that I show there quite often in Memphis, where she wasn't working but got approved because she was pursuing income. Maybe he's got some kind of a lawsuit he's waiting on, or something. I would check. I would definitely look into that and pursue that, because that may, work out pretty well for you as well, and just crunch some numbers on that. But I wouldn't stop the train. So here's how you have to be a little careful on these when it comes to hardest hit funds. You can inform this person or his guardian or who's ever helping him on, here's the website information, here's the documents, here's the phone number you can call to get this money, and let them go and do that on their own path. In the meantime, you can continue to push the foreclosure. What they're not allowing you to do, and again, I don't know that they would ever, how they would ever prove this, but what they're saying is you can't dual track this. You can't be foreclosing upon him and then also helping him with hardest hit funds. You're going to have to do one or the other if you're assisting him in doing that. Okay, but if you just simply provide him the information of where he can go, that's a different story. You can pursue your solution, which is through the foreclosure, possibly, and he can pursue his, which may be the hardest hit fund. So it's a little bit of a delicate balance there, but I think you got my point on how to handle that. The other thing you could do if you wanted is take the foreclosure to a certain point. If that's what he needs to kind of be woken up, if you will, that this is something that now has to be addressed. And then you can always stop that, push with the hardest hit funds and that sort of thing with him and push with your servicing company, which is what you can do in Tennessee. And then if that doesn't work out, then pick up where you left off on the foreclosure.
Yeah, I went to the Tennessee website for hardest hit funds, and you know, everything shows that it's expired. They're not taking anything.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. Now that's going to change.
Right. I saw that they're going to get money on the first phase.
Yeah.
But I don't really. I mean, where would I send any information to? They're not accepting any applications per their website.
Did you call the phone number or what did you?
I did not, but I'm going to start calling
phone
people.
Because I know other students have already done this. They've called the phone numbers and said, when will you have the money? And the last, unless it's in this article, because like I said, I just got this article. Mm. The last one I read said that they were going to get the funds sometime this summer. And that's as specific as they really were. Let me see if there's a more definitive date now.
So I can't give him hardest hit fund information myself. Can I forward it to the servicing company to have it mailed? Or
no, you can send him the hardest hit fund information. There's nothing wrong with that, and you know, a nice little letter. Mm-hmm. What Tennessee doesn't allow is that you, as the lender, talk with them directly. You have to go through your servicing company, and you have to be an approved servicing company, by the way, too, if memory serves. So that's something else we need to find out. I know FCI is approved. I wonder if NAA is.
I'm sorry, what do they have to be approved for?
If memory serves correct, Tennessee requires that they only talk with your servicing company, not you. You're the note owner. They can't talk to you. They can only talk to your servicing company. And the mm-hmm. servicing company already has to be approved through the hardest hit funds. And I know FCI is. I don't know if NAA is. So that may be something you check first before you flip it over to NAA.
It's with Madison right now.
Okay. So you may have to switch it somewhere else to pursue hardest hit funds. Where I'm trying to talk to you and look for Tennessee. What's going the wrong way? And see what they.
Where are you looking here? What do you have? I see what you have on the screen, but I don't really. Oh, keep my home.
Yeah, if you go to the regular hardest hit fund website. And you go on the lower right-hand side, it'll give you state-by-state information. Okay. So just Google search hardest hit funds, and it's the second one that comes up. And then just click on state-by-state information. And Keep My Tennessee Home is the website. They also have fact sheets and that sort of thing that you can use for marketing to help him out. But you may want to spend some time on this and see.
Yeah, I looked at that yesterday, and I also looked at the Veterans Affairs. Okay. Since he's a vet, I thought maybe, you know, they might want to help him somehow. I don't know. He seems like he needs some help.
There's the brochure. Yeah. Don't see it. But you may want to call them up, see when they're getting new funds, and just find out the procedure before you switch to a new servicing company.
Okay.
Because once again, think of these as – there's servicing companies and there's workout companies. Okay. They don't have to be the same. They don't have to be the same at all. You could have Madison just do the servicing. Let's say Madison's approved in Tennessee. And for everybody on the call, I don't know. You'd have to double check. But let's just say they're on the approved list. You could keep it at Madison, have Madison start to call on the other. In the meantime, you could have the parts of NAA company that you need get that in motion so that if the hardest hit fund's not going to work out, you can switch gears and NAA's ready to go. You can outsource different tasks for different things.
Okay. And I guess my last and final question is, I should probably just cut a check and pay his last 2 years of taxes now, huh?
You should probably do that before when's a tax sale? Tax deed sale?
I don't have any notice of a tax deed sale.
Okay. Do you know how to find that out?
I just haven't. No, I did a search and got his last two tax bills, and I didn't see anything there.
Okay, you're going to have to go to the county website on that one and find out. See, it could be sitting in the to be sold, and if it goes from a tax lien sale to a tax deed, then you could be wiped out of your position. So you don't want that to happen. Do you know how to find the county website?
I don't think so. Not off the top of my head. I'd have to.
Okay, if you know the county, you can just Google search it. You could also use netronline.com.
Net what?
netronline.com, which, oh, I got two. That was my spelling. I got two periods in there, two dots. And then you can just plug in the, go to public records, put in the zip code. I don't know if you had that on here.
The code is 38242.
Whoops, 38242. Yeah, see, there's two different counties with that same zip code. So
he's in Henry.
He's in Henry?
Okay. He's in Henry.
Okay, great. And here's your tax collector's office. You can call them. Go to Data Online. We'll take you to the website, and you can do a little research here. This one looks pretty easy because you can use the owner's name or address.
Oh, I see. You want the address?
Let's see. Yeah, we can try it, sure.
It's 123 Grove Street.
I'm just going to put Grove. Sometimes these are pretty particular what they want. No. 123 Grove, right?
Correct.
You may have to play around with it. You might have to just search by his name or something to pull that up.
All right.
But
I'll do it. I don't know.
Yeah, see what they're owed and see what when it has to be paid. And you just want to make sure it's not scheduled for a tax sale. If they're looking at, because I can't remember everything on the top of my head on what particular states do in taxes. But, you know, if you're looking at another year before it could be forced to a foreclosure sale for taxes, well, okay, then you got another year. But if you've got 6 months or a month or whatever, you got to get that paid. Okay, and we do have, if you're looking for more info on that, we've got some good mini lessons on the membership website that go through how that works and gives you some other tips on that if you need some extra help. So you can log in there on your website and just go to training and go down to mini lessons. Yours won't look like that when you open it up. So if you go to training here and go to non-performing and go to mini lessons, you've got several things on there in tax liens and deeds and how they work. So if you need a little refresher or more background information, we've got four little videos on just that topic. Five.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Did we cover everything or was there something else we were looking at?
No, that sounds about it. He's from my little problem child.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Let me find you so I can mute you again here. Here we are. Okay. Let's see. Got that. Yeah, Keith Warrington was saying, yeah, his hardest hit fund deal was done a couple years ago, and that's why I always say, go back and do some of these things on your own, because time flies, and who knows, some of these states, I think what Keith is getting at is, hey, things might be a little different than when I did that case study a couple years ago. And certainly these states need to move that money. And so I would always try to pursue that up front, even though their websites might indicate that they someone might not qualify if they're not working, I would still go through it, because their website may not be updated to what they're actually doing in the office, by the way. And I can't remember the full story around, but I've had a student tell me that before too. Their website said this, but I pursued it anyway. And it turns out in-house, they were already doing that. Just their website company hadn't gotten around to changing it. Jackie Lambertson is sharing with you that Madison did my hardest hit fund for Indiana. So probably safe to say that if they're registered with that state, they can register with other states, and Shante can do it. So thank you, Jackie, for sharing that. Bill's asking if forced place insurance covers vandalism and theft. The right way to do it on the insurance on the property is if you can have an inspector go by on a regular basis. That's something that you'll hear Charles talk about all the time. If you can have, and I know NAA can do this and some of the other companies, but they send somebody out at least once a month to go by the outside of the property if it's still being worked on, or still if the note's still being worked on, I should say. Like in that stage, are they moving out? Are we foreclosing? Are we doing hardest hit funds? You're not going to be able to get inside the house with an inspection, but they'll have somebody go by about every month, and we do it on all the Colonial properties just to make sure, because one place where you get turned down on some of these claims is when you had this insurance for a period of time, and now you've got this big problem, and they were like, well, what was going on with the property for the first 6 months, that sort of thing. So they definitely look at that. So you're just bolstering your case if you have an initial inspection done, external, whatever it may be. If it's a vacant property, different story. And then get insured and just have somebody go by and check the condition on a regular basis. And that way you can show, hey, the property was in good shape. We had people going by on a monthly basis. And apparently some kids broke in and vandalized it and set it on fire, that sort of thing. Okay. All right. But yes, it should cover damage to the property. Kent's asking, if we do put the property through the foreclosure process, when it comes to setting our strike price, can we include that include those fees in there as to having to pay for insurance? My default position is yes, you can for that. Some states may say no, you can't, but I believe yes, you can. It's typically not going to be the one that changes whether the property's gone back to you or if it's being bought by somebody else, but yes. Another question here. I would default back on they don't have insurance. If they're not making their mortgage payment on there, they don't have it insured. It's very atypical if they do. So what I would do is I would get the insurance on it. If it turns out that it's already insured, then the insurance company will probate back for you unused portion. So I would take that as my fallback position. Wallace has a good question here. What if you purchase a second position non-performing loan and the first position lender already has forced place insurance? Can you just add yourself as another loss payee? I don't think so on that one, Wallace, because you're not paying for that policy. And then it becomes a matter of how much do they have it insured for? Okay, so if you're in second position non-performing, if I'm a bank and I'm getting forced place insurance, I'll probably insure it enough to cover me, not the guy behind me, possibly. Maybe they're insuring the whole, what the 100% of what the house is worth. Maybe they're doing it that way. And then maybe there's a claim for you as well. Don't know. I think that's really more of an insurance specific question. In other words, policy by policy. Yeah, and we changed that one, Jackie. Let's see. You bet. In order to verify whether land contract's recorded or not, when I look for the recorder stamp. Another question in here unrelated to this last question. I'll just add it down here. Where'd it go? In order to verify whether a land contract is recorded or not, would I look for the recorder stamp on the agreement for deed or on the assignment of land contract? It's easy to look at. It's easy to look at both, I would say, but the again, whatever document's going to be recorded, whether it was an assignment or an agreement for deed, you'll know if it's recorded by looking for that recorder stamp. Absolutely. And we've actually done that on this call before. So it'll be typically, well, I hate to give it to me. It's normally on the front cover, at least today. Sometimes they used to do them on the back way back in the day on the back of the paper, but it's done on the front. Normally I've seen up in the upper right-hand side, but I have seen some down on the lower left. But you're just going to scan through that document and see if the recorder stamp is on there. That's definitely one way you can do it. The other way, of course, is just go to public records and look it up to see if it has been recorded. So really two ways. If the stamp's there and you see the date, time, and everything else, it's been recorded, you can just go to public records would be the second way to do that. Very good. So let me, just to make sure you guys have all those websites, I'm going to delete the syllabus that's on there right now, and I'm going to put this one on there. And I'll give you all a few minutes to download that. It should be there now. If you don't get a chance for some reason to download that now, this will be the syllabus that gets put on the archive website as well. So you've got that. Looks like we've got all of the questions that were proposed, got those answered. And a couple of new things. Some of you might not have seen. They do have a new email address for content when you're submitting docs. So we're getting some good content, and it's requiring people to send docs, and all of a sudden different computers and different security settings, it goes to a junk folder or it gets trashed, something like that. So we've set up a Dropbox link that you can just email to. So if there's content, you can just Dropbox it right there, and that way Matt can pick it up and it won't get lost. So that's what that all is all about. Post-closing, when you have questions on an asset that you have purchased, you have closed on the deal and looking at paperwork or just any kind of questions on what happens after the closing, that's the best email to use for that one as well. And got a couple other websites and videos that you can take a look at for the various classes. And also, of course, we've got the partials down there with Martha. So everything you need's on that syllabus. So very good. Well, we're at the top of the hour, so actually finish it on time tonight, which is nice. So thanks everybody for being on the webinar. Do hope that you enjoyed it. Hope that you learned something from it, and look forward to seeing many of you, I'm sure, out in San Fran this weekend, and then Fort Lauderdale the following weekend. So we're going from one point to the other over the next couple of weeks. So I'll be out there, Kevin Moore, Dwayne, Ben, and Rachel will be in San Fran with us as well. So we got the whole team. All right. So thanks, y'all. Have a good evening. Talk to you again.